Nation meeting to order. Welcome, colleagues, and it's nice to see such a nice audience. We have, in our two previous meetings, been doing what we might call an overview on a number of subjects, subjects that those of us on the Education Committee, we feel should be well versed with. And so today we'll continue that, and our topics today are the State Report Card and the Database Initiative. And so these are very much in the news, and I believe, January 31, we're going to have a report card issued, and it will get a lot of attention, as well it should. So anyway, with that, we'll invite up to the table whomever would like to appear.
That leaves us pretty open, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you again for letting us come before you. Again, for your record, I'm Pat Burke, Deputy Superintendent for Curriculum Policy, Educational Policy. As the Chair mentioned, this is a continuation of our overview, and let me once again express our appreciation to this committee for taking the time to do this so early in the session. We really do appreciate the opportunity to be before you. If you recall in my remarks on Monday, we talked about the importance of six kind of characteristics of high-performing systems, and two of those characteristics were the ability to use data in important ways to make decisions, and the second is the importance of public accountability. So what we have today is a continuation of that discussion in more depth with you on the State Report Card and the Database Initiative. We reviewed with you in our first presentation the Quality Education Commission and its work around the quality education model. The QEM is actually predicated or has as a base the need for an ability to compare across school districts and indeed across individual schools on common characteristics and what they cost and what their impact is. That's this really powerful tool that is known as the Database Initiative, the creation of the ability to ask those questions in very significant ways. And as I also mentioned, 4 years ago, or in two sessions ago, the Oregon Legislature addressed the issue of public accountability by creating the Oregon Report Card. And as the Chair just mentioned, version 4 of the report card will be released next week. So with me today are two colleagues, Nancy Heiligman, whom you met at our earlier presentation from the Office of Finance and Budget, will make a presentation on the Database Initiative. Nancy, prior to coming to the Department of Education, was very involved from the Eugene District in helping to create the DBI, so there really is no better person, in my judgment, in the state to share with you DBI than Nancy. And Nancy Schneider is also with us today. She is the district's director of the State Report Card Project, has been up to her eyeballs in the last couple of weeks getting ready for the release, and has an overview for you on the report card. Unfortunately, and I've asked the indulgence of the chair, my presence is needed back in the department in a meeting with the state board. The content of the meeting is really best presented by my two colleagues anyway. So with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I'm going to excuse myself and turn the meeting over to Nancy and Nancy.
Thank you. Nancy Heiligman, I might say, I heard these many compliments about you in 1999, so here it is, 2003, and we're hearing them again, so we're all impressed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman, Office of School Finance, Department of Education. I'm very pleased to be able to address the committee again and to talk to you about the Database Initiative. And what struck me when I began putting this presentation together was that we now have 3 years of data for all of the school districts in the state, and 5 years of data for the districts who participated as pilot districts. And it made me feel old. It's been 5 years of working on this, and we are beginning to see many dividends in having this kind of depth in our data. What I wanted to do today was to just give you a little background on the challenges that the state faced and how the database came about, to talk about the results and what the database is, briefly to talk about the department's vision for the future in terms of technology, and then to spend some time looking at some sample reports and what are the kinds of information that you can actually get out of the database. First, back in the mid-90s, with all the changes from the Education Reform Act and the changes in school funding from local to state, there was a great need for information at the state level on how districts were spending their money, how were resources allocated, what kind of results were schools getting, linking performance to funding, and also a great need for comparability. Districts were not accounting or reporting data in similar ways, and so there was a lot of variation and a lot of frustration on the part of policymakers in trying to get good data. I think even more frustrating was that there was a lot of data at the Department of Education, but it was mainly in paper, it was in files, in file cabinets, and on desktop databases, and wasn't readily accessible without a huge amount of manual work. So the vision that the 1997 legislature developed was a statewide database housed at the Department of Education, a large relational database with a variety of information, comparable data at the school level, not only just the school district, but also being able to look at each school in the state, and then available to policymakers, but also available to the public on the Internet. The department did develop this system, and the data are all gathered over through the Internet. Districts, even the very smallest district in Oregon, sends its data to the department over the Internet, very detailed information about school spending and student information and also performance results. That is housed in this large database and then extracted into a variety of reports, and many of those reports are available on the Internet. And as far as the types of data, lots of information about funding, about school budgets, how dollars are spent, revenues that are going to school districts, information on student results, these are state assessment scores, dropout rates, information on staffing, detailed information on teachers and instructional assistants, classified staff at each school building. School processes, things like class size and instructional time. Quite a bit of information on student demographics and how that varies from school to school. And then also some information on facilities and school infrastructure. As I mentioned, we now have 5 years of data for the 16 pilot districts that took part in the initial pilot project, and they represent about almost 30% of the students in the state. So we do have 5 years of data, and 3 years statewide for every school and district in the state. And the 0102 data, which is from the last school year, there is quite a bit of data available on the website right now, and we expect to have it completed within the next few weeks, hopefully by early February. All of the last year's data will will be in the database. And one nice thing about the reports on this database is that they're dynamic. These are not just paper reports that are copied and posted on the internet. When you go in and look at a report on the database, you're actually calling against the database and looking at the most current information. So as soon as we get information in from schools and it's validated, it goes right into the database. And that has increased the timeliness of data just tremendously, almost a year actually, quicker now in terms of getting the information in, validated, and available for use. So the benefits are really that we've also automated the data collection with the schools, and so it has eliminated many of the paper reports that schools had to send in for many years to the department. There's still more work to do here. That by all means, not all of the reporting is done through the DBI. That is, you know, something that the department is working on, and as a result of budget cuts, we're still moving ahead, but much more slowly than we had planned in this current biennium. The database is integrated with other initiatives at OBE, collecting the data for the report card that Nance is going to talk about, collecting information that helps with the school fund distribution to school districts, and Dennis Pat mentioned the quality education model. And the database is very much integrated with the model, and both of these initiatives were really developed in conjunction with each other, so that the data from the database initiative is used to build the estimates that go into the model, and then the quality ed model makes estimates about what certain schools would cost and what the cost of education is in Oregon. So, and then those estimates are verified as new data are collected. And the idea is basically a very interactive process and one of continuous improvement, so that over the years, as the database becomes richer, it will inform the model, and the model will improve and be in turn informed by the data. So importance and the really usefulness of the quality ed model is really based on having real comparable data from our school districts. Some other examples of recent uses of the data in the DBI. One is the School Revenue Forecast Committee. That is a group of state staff and other education partners, legislators on that committee, who are charged with calculating current service levels for the state school fund, determining, forecasting what revenues may be available for schools, and they have been able to improve the accuracy of that calculation tremendously over the last couple of years, using, again, real data rather than just kind of statewide estimates. The department recently conducted the small school study and the ESB study at the direction of the legislature during the interim, and based again on DBI data. The special ed task force led by Representative Hobson also relied on the data to look at the cost of special education. And the Secretary of State recently released a state audit of K-12 spending, and again looking at the database. So those are just a few examples. The department gets thousands of hits on our website each month looking at the data. As for the future, Pat mentioned the importance that the department places on developing integrated data systems throughout the state. And there are several reasons that this is needed. Basically, schools need better tools to do their work, and better technology tools. And I think one example, probably the best example right now, is the TESA project, which is the online assessment system that the department is implementing across the state. So that rather than have paper and pencil tests that are very cumbersome to administer, students can go in, take their tests online, and then get instant results. And so that's one example. There are several business drivers driving the need for improved systems. Federal requirements, particularly No Child Left Behind requirements for increased data. The decreases in state funding, which just really increase the need for additional efficiencies in the schools. Mobility of students and the need to keep records on students as they move around the state between schools and districts. We have many different kinds of systems out in our schools and different data centers, and also just need more accurate and timely information. So based on this, the department is working with school districts and other education partners. We're really looking at a pre-K through higher ed technology system for the state. And we're not talking about some big single system. We're talking about systems that will integrate with each other, that can communicate with each other, and really provide a seamless flow of data between agencies, districts, schools, higher ed, community colleges, wherever that information needs to go. And this is a 5 to 7 year technology vision, but it is one that the department is working towards as it implements its systems. That's just a quick look at the future, and I did want to spend a little time. You have in your packet some sample reports. There's a yellow packet, I believe, that you received. And the first page is just all this is a table of contents. If you go to our website, there's a listing of the different kinds of reports that are available. And the other thing is that each one of those reports, you can really design, pick and choose by setting different parameters what kind of information you want to get out of that. You can pick certain districts, certain schools, decide which year's data you want to compare. So there are literally thousands of combinations of data that are available. And another point is that if the reports aren't configured exactly the way that the user wants, and then you can download the data into a spreadsheet and reformat it. And we have heard that quite a few users do that. Just some real simple examples. If you look at the green sheet in your packet, this is just an example of what we call a district profile. This is Salem-Keizer School District, a comparison between the 1997-98 school year and 2000-2001, just comparing student demographics, staffing, community demographics, spending per student, other kinds of information about class sizes, student assessment scores.
Mr. Chair.
Over there.
Yes, Representative Farr. Thank you. Under the students category on the green sheet, I see a category or a bullet item that's neglected and delinquent students. That seems to be more of a qualitative decision. And there's quite a change in the numbers there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Farr, there is in statute a definition for neglected and delinquent students that is funded through the school fund. And so we actually we receive a listing of the numbers of those students in each district across the state and do give additional weighting through the formula for those students. They are mainly students who are placed in foster homes.
I see.
So it is basically a statutory definition. Okay.
So it is somewhat quantitative then. Thank you.
Moving on to some of the other examples, the blue sheet is a a student enrollment comparison, and in this report, just to demonstrate the power of the database, for example, you can I've chosen 2 years, 2001-02 and this current year, 02-03. October district enrollment for districts between 3,000 and 10,000 students. And then I sorted that by the percent change. So you can see the first district on there is a fast-growing district. Sherwood increased by 5.7%. And then down to Corvallis District at the end, which lost almost 11% of their students in 1 year. So you can, again, just select lots of different kinds of data based on what you're interested in. Select districts, select and sort, and really go into quite a bit of detail. The salmon colored one is just one for Beaverton School District. This is information on the number of free and reduced students eligible for free and reduced lunches in that district. Again, sorted by the percentage. And this is school by school. The pink report is, I think, a very interesting one, and one that our schools use quite a bit. It's called Similar School Comparisons. You can go into the database, select, for example, your school, and then choose certain characteristics, compare, find similar schools that are high performing. So, and high performing in this case based on third grade reading was the criteria that was set. But you can go in and try to find schools that have similar demographics, and then you know, presumably look at the data, call the school, maybe visit them. We do like to make the point that the data tend to raise questions rather than give you answers, that it's easy to jump to conclusions sometimes when you look at these data. But it does give you a very good starting point and a base to ask more questions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you. Is the entire database available at the building level so they can pick and choose their menu, so to speak?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, we have both district level and school level reports on the database, but most of the data are at the school level. And if the particular report isn't available on the website, we can send it to the user. One of the things that we would be very interested in at the department is to hear from the committee about other types of data or other kinds of presentations on the website that would be useful to you. So as you get a chance to look at it and your staff works with the data, we'd be very open to suggestions for improvement for the database.
A follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up, yes.
Thanks, sir. How available is it to, say, me at home?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, it is available if you have an internet connection and a computer.
Great. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Nancy, it's kind of embarrassing that, or says something that Representative Hobson and I would write down a question. It's the same question for you. We did it independently of one another. But you mentioned TESA, and very briefly, could you elaborate a bit on TESA? What is its status now? How much is it in use? Those kinds of things. I think the committee would be interested, and certainly I am.
Yes, Mr. Chair. TESA is short for Technology Enhanced Student Assessment, and it is still in the middle of the rollout. I believe by the end of this year, we will have half of all the schools in the state testing on the automated system. I understand it, the implementation is going very well. It's scheduled to be finished actually in 2 years from now, to have every school in the state on TESA. And also they intend to add more tests as they go along. Right now, I believe they're just testing reading and math in TESA. What the reports are is that the schools and particularly the students seem to like it. I mean, I'm not saying that students really like to take tests, but the word is that students are much more engaged when they're taking the test on the computer, that the reduction in paperwork is just amazing. And then also that the data are available much sooner. On the paper and pencil test, schools would have to wait 3 to 6 months often to get the results back, and now with the TESA results, it's the student gets instant feedback, the teacher gets more detailed information within a few weeks and can use that information then to inform instruction. And it's just a very exciting project, and is moving forward very well.
So prior to TESA, for the assessments, the statewide assessments, there were like so-called windows that went on for quite a few days. And this TESA, once it's fully implemented, will eliminate the need for those testing windows?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. One of the nice things about TESA is that students can come in, for example, in the fall and take a pretest, assess how they're doing and what they need to work on, and then take the test later, once or twice more, when they feel they're ready, rather than having just a two-week window mm-hmm. each year where they can take the test.
Okay.
So it will become much more flexible and just better for the students and give much more information to the teachers mm-hmm. as well.
So you said about the end of this school year, it'll be about 50% implemented?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Sure.
Do you anticipate when it will be finished? Or
well,
do you dare prognosticate?
My understanding is that TESA is a four-year rollout, and this is the second year. It's picking up momentum as it's going. Probably the biggest challenge has been in the technology available at the school level. And so schools have had to get ready and make sure that their computers are ready and mm-hmm. capable of handling TESA. So otherwise, I think that the implementation would go even faster. Schools are very anxious to get on the
TESA.
Any
questions? Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Well, thank you very much, Nancy. We appreciate the overview on the database initiative, and it's good to hear that it's going well, and the potential remains great, I think. So,
thank
you.
Yeah. With that, I'll turn it over to Nancy Schneider for an update on the report card.
Thank you, Nancy. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Schneider, and I have responsibility at the department for coordinating the efforts to produce the school and district report cards. And I appreciate this opportunity to give an overview, because I've been pretty knee-deep in the details as of late. As you probably know, we are on schedule for a release next week on Thursday, the 30th. And what I'd like to do here today is to give you a basic overview that would have some background and context, talk about the updates to this current report card, which would include a couple of changes, and then relate a little bit of the report card to the requirements that are coming for No Child Left Behind. That would be a brief part. And then, of course, to answer your questions. So with that, the background that I'd like to share is that, as I know you are familiar with, this is the fourth report card that is being released, and it is currently our major accountability tool. It does have limitations, but it also has a broad view of what schools look like across the state. It is legislated, of course, and there's very specific language and content. And if you will look in the buff-colored handout that you have, which is the second one on the outside of the folder, you can see that the components to the overall rating consist of what's called school characteristics, and that basically is made up of the number of students that participate in the state tests. And if not enough students are tested, then you automatically get an unacceptable rating, because the view is that you want a system that includes all students. The next category is the student performance, which is basically the test scores, and that merged with the student behavior section, which is always a question that people have, because the student behavior piece is made up of attendance and dropout. And there's been some pretty significant improvements made in those areas, and we'd like to think that shining a light in those areas has something to do with helping with the dropout rate, because it is reported on the as part of the report card. The last box is an improvement rating, which is a very important part of what Oregon values. And Oregon values improvement for every student. And so that is included in the legislation, and that is included in the components that make up the overall rating. So then the overall rating is a rating that is either exceptional, strong, satisfactory, low, or unacceptable. And almost every state has their own report card, but not very many states put a rating on the schools. Most states have a report that they give to parents that have the assessment report, the dropout report, the attendance. They have many of the same components, but they don't go the next step and say, your school is, you know, blank. I'm not blank, but... so that is somewhat unique to Oregon. This is a report to parents, and schools do see this data before it's used to calculate the rating. The policy is, if it's data that will be used in a rating, or if it's a new piece to the report card, districts validate it. So they look at it and say, yep, we had that many. And one of the new pieces in this year's report card is expulsions due to weapons. So that was one that of course, they would want to be sure they have the right number there. And there is a standard definition for that. This report card must be issued by January 31st, and it needs to be issued by the 31st, but school districts have until March 30th to distribute it. And some districts do wait until, say, they have conferences in the spring or something. Some send it out right away, so that varies. It's not meant to be a comprehensive look at the school. It is as comprehensive as it can be without having the school put their local information part in there. There is a part on the report card that schools add their own local information. And if you look on the back of the sample elementary card that's on the front of your folder, there is a section that schools use to talk about their sports and their music and the things that are really unique and important to them. That's not collected in the exact same way in every school, so we can't really report that. Those are those things that make a school unique that we need to talk about there. The major changes, a couple of things that you might be interested in, is that we've talked with over 100 large and small groups of parents and teachers and administrators and school board members, administrative groups. We work with COSA and OEA and OSBA. And as a matter of fact, OSBA just completed their... they do a report card toolkit every year that has sample letters for districts to use and question and answers, and that's a very helpful tool for folks, and this is available on their website. The feedback that we got from those groups was pretty clear from the previous releases. Feedback fell into generally one of or they fell into three categories. One was, that formula is so hard to understand, we can't figure out why we got that rating. So if you're going to update the report card, try to simplify it. The second piece of feedback was, you know, it's pretty easy to be a satisfactory school. We'd like to see the standards raised. And that happened also. We made that change. And the third thing was, it was very important to people that we kept the target the same for 3 years. That 1 year it wasn't, this is what makes up the rating, and then the next year, well, we're going to add this, and the next year we're going to add this. It was very important not to move the target. And so we were able to accommodate that too. So in terms of simplifying how you got a rating, this is a very simple explanation, but this helps me understand it. Last year and the previous 3 years, a school could get in their student performance, that's their test score rating. That's the big category. It's about 80% of their overall rating. And a school could have a student performance rating of strong, and they didn't have very, very strong test scores. And that was confusing to people, because what they didn't see right by looking at this on the first blush was they really didn't have strong test scores. What they had was they had satisfactory test scores, but what else was inside that rating kind of baked in was improvement, and they made a lot of improvement. So when you put the improvement together with their satisfactory performance, their test score rating, their student performance rating was strong. Well, that was confusing. So what we did to simplify that is we still have the same components, because remember, we really value improvement, it's important. But instead of that student performance category being strong, they would get an overall rating of strong, so that these stand alone. So their test scores kind of stand alone, the improvement stands alone. And then you can say, oh, they got a strong rating, and it looks like they had okay test scores, but they made a lot of improvement, which is what happened in terms of making that rating go up. So the feedback is that that's a positive change.
Excuse me, Nancy. Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nancy, along with that, does that take care of the situation where a school district or an individual building had very high test scores, but their improvement wasn't good, so it deflated their overall rating?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, hopefully that is built into the formula this year. However, this is the first year of another cycle, so it would be possible to have an exceptional rating last year, but since the standard was tweaked a little bit, they may not maintain that this year. But if they got an exceptional rating at the beginning of this cycle and they maintained that, then they're likely to get it for the second year. They don't have to keep improving. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Nancy, I have a question too on the improvement rating category. 4-year improvement in reading and math knowledge and skills. Is that comparing in that 4-year period the same classes as they move, say, from grade 3 to 4 to 5 to 6? Or does that compare 4 years ago, the third grade, and then 3 years ago, another third grade, and then last year, another third grade, and this year, a fourth third grade?
Mr. Chair, you're your second description is correct, unfortunately. It's not the same group of kids.
Yeah.
It is the third grade in the same school. And what we're hoping in the next round of revision is that we would have student identifiers, which would allow us to do the same group of kids. Right now, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm. So that would be
That would be
a real improvement.
Yes, it would. It would be.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would caution a little on that and remember that that particular measurement is of the school, not of the individual students. There are a number of other ways of measuring the individual students. And I think if we're looking at the measurement of the school itself, that it's okay to have that group moving along. Again, there's always two sides to every one of these issues, at least.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nolan.
I hesitate to venture into this discussion between three education professionals, but it seems to me that actually both are valid measurements. One, we want to know that the school is improving the way it is teaching to third graders, and the only way to know that is to test each group of third graders against last year's group of third graders. We also want to know that the school is helping children who performed maybe less than strongly in third grade, that the school is helping them in the fourth grade improve their ability and catch up. And that's probably not the right phrase, but I think both of them are important measurements for us to know and for the teachers to know so that they can customize the learning for those children.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Well said.
If you'd like to look at the format, I have put two documents on the front of the folder. One of them is a sample elementary card, and if you look up under the in the top left corner where it says comparisons are not valid between this year's ratings and ratings from previous years. Now, we all know no one would think of comparing them, but we do want to make that point. It uses the same components, but it's ratcheted up a little bit. What has been helpful to the schools is to see where they fall on that continuum. And if it happens that they have just missed an exceptional rating or they've just missed a satisfactory rating, they can see that they are very close. So that seems to be a positive component. What's new on the front of this card is elementary class size. That was a direct result from school saying, with the reductions that we're making, we would like to be able to have a baseline and show what our class size looks like. And remember, this is from last year. So that shows how many classes in their school are fewer than 20 and more than 30 and in between.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I right in assuming, Nancy, that the same fundamental data is used in determining the class size, and I would assume from the DVI, in other words, special ed librarians, PE teachers, if somebody happens to have any of those left, that they either are or are not included in the determination of class size?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, as a former elementary school principal for many years, you want to be real sure that these are the number of heads in the classroom. And the way this was reported was, I've been assured that it is the number of students that are in the classroom with that teacher. So if you have a 2-3 split, so to speak, it's the actual total number of students in that classroom. And, of course, you also see expulsions due to weapons on the front part. That box that says Department of Education use is when, say, a school may have had a boundary change or something, and we want to make sure we note that. We just put notes in there. Then along with the report card, we've developed these how to read documents that are optional. Some school districts choose to reproduce them and some don't, but they are pretty helpful to look at real specific questions in terms of what makes up what portion. I have some predictions about what we're going to be looking at next week, and
good.
I have my crystal ball. Because the bar has been raised, the middle part last year, and I know we're not comparing last year, but for a frame of reference, most schools ended up in the strong category. We raised that bar, and I would anticipate quite a few schools dropping from strong to satisfactory, so that the bulk will probably end up being in the satisfactory section. And I would anticipate probably double the number of low and unacceptable schools. Because the last set of report cards was the standards for those was put together based on 1998 data. It started at a pretty basic level. And in 1998, schools were not nearly as focused on school improvement efforts as they are now. So as we kept that target the same, schools were able to meet that pretty easily. So it's been ratcheted up a bit, and so I would anticipate then schools, there being more low and unacceptable schools. But by the same token, I would anticipate there being more exceptional schools, because we have some schools, and by looking at the test scores, that are doing an excellent job, in especially those K-3 schools that only have, you know, third grade tests. They're doing very well. They have 85% of their kids meeting the standard, and that would be likely to be in the exceptional range. So I'm anticipating sort of an expanded range. And we will know this very soon. Schools will verify looking at their card this Friday, and they check that to make sure that everything looks right and it's spelled right, and that, you know, it was as we reported. And then we make the changes we need to make, and then it's a public release on next Thursday. So.
Excuse me, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it safe to understand or assume that even though the information is going to be released next Thursday, you mentioned that some districts aren't going to distribute or won't distribute until March, the information would still be already available on the website, however?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, yes, it is. And that's why it's always surprising to me that there are schools that don't send them out. They do not have to mail them. They do need to have take responsibility for getting them in the hands of every parent. But mailing is not always the best way and is expensive. So we try to make that easy on schools.
Nancy, does the report cards also go to parents of charter school?
Mr. Chair, yes, they do. If they're a public charter school, yes, they do. One interesting number this year is I believe there were about 150 schools that will not receive a rating. And the reason for that is, I think, new schools don't get a rating. And if you are involved in a boundary change where you combine two schools, if you're I know in Salem Kaiser, when new schools open, you can take quite a few kids out of one school, and then you don't have the same group. I mean, your school is basically a new school. And then you don't get a rating. So there's about 150 of those schools statewide. There's 1,200 schools about. So, just a couple of more points about, I know you've heard about No Child Left Behind, and that will be a different way to look at schools. And I've made a pretty, my graphics are pretty basic here, and you have your little green sheet that in the packet, and inside that packet you also have a sample high school card and a sample high school how to read card and a sample district card and a sample how to read district card. This in the No Child Left Behind legislation, schools need to be looked at as either students either meeting or not meeting the standard. So the bar is right here. You're either in this category or you're in this category. The Oregon system is different from that. And if you look on the back, this is, like I said, it's pretty simple, but the test scores are divvied up into five categories. And when you're in, and you have a very low score, you're in this category. You could get a low score, you could get a nearly meeting score, you could get a meet score, or you could get an exceed score on your test. When you are, say, in the very low category, you get X number of points. The expectation is that you move up, because in the report card, that's built into the formula. You've got to keep moving kids up. If you move to low, from very low to low, you are given as much credit as if you move kids from meets to exceeds. So the expectation is everybody's moving up. In a system that has a bar like this, sometimes the only kids who get attention are the ones right under the bar. We're expecting everything to move up. So that's one difference in our system. And as we learn more about the No Child Left Behind, we're going to do coordinating, but we don't have that information yet.
Nancy, will our report card, I presume under No Child Left Behind, the federal government will have to approve of our report card. Does anyone anticipate any problem with that? Because ours is a bit more detailed.
Ours is more detailed and emphasizes different things. The feedback has been our report card does not meet all of their requirements. So our report card is required to come out by January 31st, which coincidentally is the same day that the adequate yearly progress applications due. So it's going to take us some time to look at that. But as it stands, they have not said, in fact, they have said that is not exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about this. That's all that I have. There will be confusion about schools who are rated strong, exceptional, or even satisfactory. Get that rating because they've moved kids up and because they're in this category that conflict with this. So there's going to be confusion, and we're anticipating that, and we'll deal with that as it comes up. So we will be coordinating. And actually, that's the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions? Okay, well, Nancy, thank you very much for coming in, and we appreciate hearing what you had to report to us, and we'll add this to our store of supplies and materials, and when we have lots of time, we can pour over these in greater detail. So with that, we will adjourn the meeting.